You are listening to We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio. Welcome to the latest edition of the Thomas Merton Center Show, a program that highlights the ideas and activities of members of a unique peace and social justice organization in Western Pennsylvania. My name is John Hare, and today we're talking about an irrational, persistent fear that seems to possess many people, and even our media and institutions. It's a phobia that equates all Muslims, those whose religion is Islam, with terrorists. This can lead to harmful and discriminatory situations for our Muslim neighbors and citizens who only want to practice their faith in peace and fellowship. The latest edition of The New People, the center's monthly publication, has a compelling piece entitled Institutional Islamophobia, How It Impacts the Mental Health of Muslim Americans, written by Imaz Athar, one of today's guests. Imaz is a student of neuroscience and sociology at the University of Pittsburgh. And also joining our conversation today is Kelsey Sharkis, a representative of the Islamic Center in Pittsburgh. Kelsey is setting up a counseling service at the Islamic Center. Imaz and Kelsey, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Happy that you can be here. Imaz, what motivated your article, and can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure thing. I think the main thing that motivated me to write it was that, you know, Islamophobia is becoming, I feel like, more prevalent in today's society. I mean, I think when you see, certain presidential candidates, you know, saying discriminatory things against Muslims.
Yeah, now who would that be?
Yeah, I think you can all guess on who that is. And then, like, you know, proposing a ban on Muslims from entering the United States. I think that Islamophobic sentiment is becoming a lot stronger. And, you know, he has a big support as well in the United States. So you see a big prevalent Islamophobic sentiment. So that's what kind of inspired me to write about the article, just because, you know, Islamophobia is so widespread in today's society.
What is your interest as well in terms of finding out more about the issue and being able to do some research, maybe perhaps towards your occupation goal as well?
Yeah. I think that, you know, so I did focus on Islamophobia becoming more and more prevalent, but also from my side, you know, back at Pitt, I do, you know, sociology research, mm-hmm. and I like to look at, you know, how societal phenomenon affect, you know, human behavior. So thinking of Islamophobia as, you know, some kind of social phenomenon in a way, seeing how that affects people, how that's, you know, really much embedded in our institutions and how, you know, it affects how people behave towards each other. So yeah, it does really affect, you know, the research that I want to do for sure.
It's kind of like, I guess, there's a certain irrational fear that spawns a discriminatory reaction, and then all of a sudden the people on the recipients of that find themselves in a very difficult situation. Right. What does the literature say about this as a mental health issue?
Yeah, so the thing is, there isn't a whole lot of literature on the subject, which is kind of another topic altogether.
Yeah.
But the literature that I did read and that does exist does show that, you know, Islamophobia does affect the mental health of Muslims in America and then, you know, throughout the world as well. There's some research done, you know, post 9/11, and it showed that, you know, some Muslims, they experienced, you know, PTSD, and an overall increased risk of, you know, common mental disorders like anxiety and depression. And so a lot of that is a result of, you know, everyday harassment. So some of it is more overt, so like verbal assaults that, you know, some Muslims face every day. And some of that is more subtle things, things that you don't necessarily, you know, notice firsthand, but kind of like microaggressions, I guess you could call them. So, that's what the literature says.
They mount up day after day, maybe small incidents, but grow to bigger incidents.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not necessarily someone, you know, saying something to you that's discriminatory, maybe some kind of how they interact with you, you know, in like a common discussion, that kind of thing. So that kind of stuff, you know, you do pick up on a little bit and it does affect you.
And the literature was pretty sparse when you did a review of it.
Yeah, it was a little sparse. And the thing is, so I did read an interview with someone, and I mentioned this in the article. And so that person, he looked up keywords. So he looked up Muslim, he looked up health, he looked up disparity, and he found that there was only like a handful of articles over thousands of articles that actually talked about these topics. So there isn't a lot of literature on the subject, and that's, you know, kind of unfortunate because, you know, the mental health of Muslims, that is becoming more and more important to research, just because, you know, Islamophobia is so, you know, prevalent. So
I think you quoted professor or a psychiatrist in the article that talked about how it really gets to a question of identity, and particularly as people are developing their identity, perhaps in a country with a different predominant culture, right, that can be quite stressful for
yeah folks. Yeah, definitely. I think so, I mean, from personal experience, so I was around 6 years old when 9/11 happened.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, obviously that was, you know, a very unfortunate day for everyone. And I think at that time, so I was raised in a Muslim household. My parents, they're Muslim, they're from Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, at home, you know, I was being raised Muslim. But then, you know, when you watch TV or when you, you know, go to class or something like that after 9/11, and you hear, you know, some like certain insults against Muslims, that kind of affects the way you view yourself, especially at a young age when you're developing your identity. I mean, so part of you wants to, you know, remain attached to your Muslim identity from your, you know, from your family. And then part of you kind of, I feel like, tries to dissociate yourself from your Muslim identity just because of, you know, the things you hear that are, you know, anti-Muslim, for example.
Right.
And then part of it is like, you want to sympathize with others when some kind of unfortunate thing happens. But it's hard to do that because, you know, you feel like you have to, you know, apologize for things as a Muslim rather than sympathizing for things. And that's another key issue because, you know, Muslims, we're not terrorists, right?
Right.
So we're not the ones committing, you know, the terroristic acts. So, I mean, we do sympathize with these things, and we do, you know, we feel really bad when bad things happen, right?
Right.
So it's difficult because, you know, you feel a pressure to have to, you know, apologize when there really isn't a need to.
And if you seek professional help, unfortunately, some of our institutions may not be sensitive to what are some of the issues in the culture from the country or the culture that you grew up in, which can be pretty important in terms of understanding what you're looking at, the conflicts that one may look at. What do you think, is this, Kelsey, what motivates some of the efforts to set up a counseling center at the Islamic Center?
It goes into it, definitely. There's a few different motivations behind it. One, is it a need for the community? That's the thing, too, is we might assume as Muslims that if we have a need, the rest of the community has a need. So our first step was to see, is this actually a crucial need for the people in the greater Pittsburgh area who say that they're Muslim? And so we actually did a huge community-wide needs assessment for the Islamic Center of Pittsburgh specifically, and which we're going to try to travel on to other mosques here shortly, just to see what the Muslims are needing for the community. And the one that we had at our center was very shocking. There was one question we asked, do you see a need for a faith-based counseling center if you're Muslim? And 91.15% said yes.
So, 91.15, wow.
91.15% said yes. So this is a very, very shocking statistic. And so getting that, we now know 100% it is needed. And so then we ask, why is it needed? And definitely the whole Islamophobia goes into that. The idea about being depressed, having anxiety, and not having someone to actually talk to that about, because maybe the person you're talking to can't sympathize, can't empathize, doesn't actually know the struggle of what it means to be a Muslim in America. And so having a faith-based counseling center that's ran and by a licensed professional that is also Muslim gets a lot of comfort for people not only to want to go, but also to help them facilitate a change that needs to happen.
What are some of the issues involved in setting up a counseling center?
These are skin. Since the community-wide survey didn't take place until, we did it in December. It was December 4th when we did it. So it actually has been recently. And so this is a very new project, a new proposal that we're working on. Uh-huh. And so starting community center now is more research end for us at the Islamic Center of Pittsburgh. Research of what does it mean like to be a faith-based counseling center, because it's very different than a private practice or a state institute. So looking up what you need, what it requires of you, and then finding a professional who actually fits all the qualifications. because we're not just finding someone with a master's degree or higher in a specific field. We also are making sure that they're Muslim. And also one of the other criteria is that they're well-versed in Islamic studies, meaning they understand the theology of the Holy Quran and the religious practices.
If you hold that thought, we're going to we need to take a break right now, but we'll be right back and talking with our fascinating guest today. This is Pittsburgh and the Thomas Merton Show. We'll see you in a little bit and come back for the second part of our program.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay, squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you know how important American consumers are? Americans consume 25% of everything made on Earth. Without the support of American consumers, every major corporation on the planet would be in trouble. How do we use that buying power to protect our family, our jobs, and our communities? Well, let's start looking at country of origin labeling on food. Right now, Nabisco is planning to send Oreo, Chips Ahoy, Honey Graham, and Ritz Cracker production to Mexico, exporting 600 good-paying American jobs from Chicago. Nabisco's made in Mexico products are bad for American jobs in our communities. As a consumer, I want American-made Oreos, Chips Ahoy, Honey Grahams, and Ritz Crackers because American jobs depend on it, and so do we. You can learn more at fightforamericanjobs.org. That's fightforamericanjobs.org.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Today, my new dad and I shot off a rocket in the park.
Today, my new son and I failed to shoot off a rocket.
He knew exactly what to do.
I had no clue what I was doing.
We set up the rocket. Hit ignition. And then?
And then nothing. Sometimes I laugh when I'm frustrated.
Then out of nowhere, the rocket launched into the air.
The rocket did get into the air.
I've never seen anything fly so high.
And then crashed into a kite.
Look out! Look out!
And then the pond.
I'll never forget that day.
Even if I tried.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of kids in foster care will take you just as you are. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
I make learning a privilege, not a chore, and frustration a tool, not an obstacle. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Make more. Teach. Visit Teach.org. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
You're listening to We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio, and this is the Thomas Merton Center Show. I'm John Hare. Our guests are Imaz Athar and Kelsey Sharkis. Kelsey's from the local Islamic Center, and Imaz has the author of an article that appeared in the New People, the Thomas Merton Center, talking about Islamophobia, irrational fear of somebody else's religion, in this case, Muslims. Kelsey, you were discussing the investigation and looking at the possibility for setting up a counseling center. And of course, the fact that there may in fact be not may in fact there is discrimination, and oftentimes that leads to very uncomfortable situations for Muslims in this country, native-born, immigrant, students, citizens. Actually, Aether makes a good point. Islam is the second largest religion in the world. It covers many countries and many ethnic identities.
Yeah, what is so beautiful, too, at the Islamic Center of Pittsburgh, we one time had someone, we asked him, can you count how many countries are represented on one of our Friday congregational prayers? He had to stop at 48 countries because he couldn't continue anymore.
Amazing.
That's just in Pittsburgh.
Amazing. So a counseling center can be a way in which you can draw from the strengths of your cultural traditions to begin to find a way where people can talk about what they're feeling, right? And begin to seek a community of support.
Yeah, there's two things too, like going into the counseling center. I think, Imaz, you're going to write about this too in the next issue. So there's two things we're battling. One is to create a comfortable environment where people feel comfortable to talk about these issues of depression or anxiety or just their overall experiences with discrimination in the United States. But another thing that's huge also that we're trying to combat is there's a huge stigma and taboo around mental illness in the States, but also far, far worse in a lot of immigrant countries, especially majority Muslim countries, where if you have a family member, if you have anyone that has a mental disorder or they're suffering from something, it's hush hush. It's, you don't tell anyone, you put it under the rug, it doesn't get treated, people don't talk about it. And so that's another reason why we saw it was so important, is because even when someone had a traumatic experience that caused some mental illness to occur, they don't seek active treatment. And so having a counseling center directly through the mosque, we hope to have that environment to make them feel comfortable that they're not actually just getting mental help, help, but they're also getting religious help along the way. Mm-hmm. That's why we hope to incorporate Islamic studies into the degree. So it's using both to help the Muslim community feel more comfortable in attending a therapy session.
It is true that in our country, I believe, that religious discrimination, unfortunately, has cropped up in many ways throughout our history, from the very first of the settlers coming to Cape Cod and meeting a native population that was already here. And really, in a lot of ways, unfortunately, our country was founded on the notion that it's somehow our responsibility to convert to our religion and to make use of the land that other people own. But I think, unfortunately, the fact of religious discrimination has occurred in many ways with the Irish who came over here, with the Jews who were refused to come to the country during World War II, with Italians who many of whom were and Slavic peoples, many of whom were brought here, and the Chinese brought here to work in our industries and under almost slave conditions. So religious discrimination is nothing that's new to us. And I think while it's important that those who are discriminated against find every way to maintain their dignity, and it's really important for those of us who see the discrimination to speak out against it and to talk about it and to organize and to work against it in our community. And it's also important, I think, to maintain good communications and to try to understand the different cultures that are going on.
Yeah, and the one thing about that, too, is with the idea of making sure that Muslims feel safe or feel like they actually are American citizens within the country, there's another ideology behind that is assimilation. The idea that they'll become part of our country if they assimilate to everything that is American, quote unquote. Like, a lot of Muslims, because they don't want to give up their their religious beliefs or their culture. If they're coming from all these other countries, they want to hold on to their culture and come to America and intermix their culture with the American culture. And so that's one thing too Muslims are battling. How do we become seen as American citizens without having to completely get rid of all of our cultural and religious ideologies and having to completely assimilate?
Yeah, I think
absolutely. It's a time-honored cultural clash. Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to add to that because my family they came over from Pakistan, so they kind of dealt with a similar thing. So part of it is, I mean, you're coming to America, you're learning an entirely new language, a new culture, and it's a difficult thing because while you're trying to learn that, you're also trying to stick to your roots in a way, you know.
Sure.
Trying to maintain your own cultural and religious identity. So there is kind of like a, not necessarily a clash, but there's like a tug of war in a way.
Yeah. And the identity issues, I'm sure, come up. It's probably a thing that works itself out over generations in our country. And I think you might find that you have some new understandings, perhaps, that your parents didn't have, and maybe if you have children, you may find that they'll have some new understandings too. But it doesn't make it easy, does it? do you feel that the support of the center is important for Muslims in the community? And is there ways that people who are not Muslims can be supportive of these efforts?
Oh yeah, 100%. So I think definitely the Islamic Center of Pittsburgh is all Islamic centers, not just the Islamic Center of Pittsburgh, because there's 7 and almost going to be 8 large mosques in the greater Pittsburgh area. And I think just being around the same community is a fantastic way to communicate about these issues with people who will sympathize and empathize, and just being able to relax for once, because you'll be around all Muslims. You don't have to defend your religion anymore. You don't have to feel on edge all the time. So it's a great place where you just come and you relax and you're around like-minded people. So yeah, the center, I think, is definitely a necessity. But then also for the non-Muslim population, the center is 100% a fantastic way to gain information, to gain knowledge in order to support the cause, show solidarity, and become an ally to the Muslims here in the greater Pittsburgh area. And I know the efforts the Islamic Center is doing, because I'm the outreach coordinator for the Islamic Center of Pittsburgh. And so what we do is we try to formulate events, we try to formulate open doors where people can come in, ask questions. We have a class called Islam 101 that happens every Saturday, 4:30 to 6 o'clock, that goes over the basic beliefs of Islam. I've gone to churches, synagogues, temples. I've gone to universities, high schools, middle schools, anywhere they'll allow me to come speak. And it's just a way to make sure that the flow of information continues to go. And so all these misconceptions that are completely widespread become to be alleviated.
Well, I know the Merton Center last night had an event called Meet Your Muslim Neighbor, a potluck dinner. And I know that many people were anxious to go, and I hope that was a successful event. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend. We're very pleased to be able to have you on the station and to have some of these issues begun to be talked about. And we look forward to the next article in the series coming up. And thank you very much for being on our program. You've been listening to the Thomas Merton Center Show on We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio. Become a member. Subscribe to our monthly publication, The New People. Go to www.thomasmertoncenter.org or call us at 412-361-3022. I'm John Hare. Thanks for listening.